Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. When the Bronx Zoo announced this week that a four-year-old tiger had tested positive for COVID-19, cat owners everywhere wondered, does that mean my cat could get the disease? And how did the tiger get exposed to the virus in the first place? We do know some of those answers from reporting, but the head veterinarian for the Sacramento Zoo is going to join us now. She is Dr. Janessa Geltema, and she is professor of zoological medicine at UC Davis. Dr. Geltema, thanks so much for being on Insight.
Thank you for having me.
What do you know about the Bronx Zoo case and COVID-19?
So the Bronx Zoo tiger case is the first kind of natural transmission of the virus that causes COVID-19 documented in an animal here in the United States. So it's a case that's the first of its kind, and it's definitely making an impact in sort of the public arena, and with people being concerned about whether their pets could potentially be susceptible.
It's being called human-to-cat transmission, and apparently a zookeeper had tested positive. How about the specifics regarding the tiger itself being tested? And apparently there are other animals at the zoo that have symptoms but have not been tested for confirmation, correct?
Yes. Yeah, so several different large exotic cats were showing clinical signs. So they were showing symptoms, is what we would refer to it in humans, of respiratory illness. So they were showing cough, kind of mild respiratory symptom or signs. So one of those animals was anesthetized in order to perform diagnostics. Obviously, with these large exotic felids, sometimes they're challenging to work with, and you have to anesthetize them in order to get diagnostics performed. So they did that with one of the animals at this zoological facility and were able to confirm the positive, the animal being positive for the virus based on this on the testing that they did during that evaluation. Now, they think that the animal was likely exposed by a zoo employee. We do think that zookeeper was likely asymptomatic at the time but shedding the virus. So we do know that humans can have the virus without actually feeling ill. So there are some people who have that happen, and that's possibly the way that this large cat was exposed to the virus in its enclosure.
What is known about large cats and a coronavirus? I guess I go back to SARS or to MERS. What's known about this species and this type of virus?
Right. So, clearly, a lot of the other coronaviruses have been known to originate in different animal species. Now, we don't have any previous evidence that tigers, per se, been a source or involved with the previous coronaviruses. And it's interesting that this species is now being kind of the first to show natural infection with this particular outbreak of coronavirus 2 SARS. So definitely there's not been a link previously, but it looks like from this preliminary evidence that that this species and potentially other large exotic felids could be susceptible to this strain and this virus in particular.
I suppose it might depend on where that particular zookeeper was in the zoo, but the press release from the Wildlife Conservation Society's official newsroom at the zoo is that none of the other snow leopards, cheetahs, the clouded leopard, the Amur leopard, or the puma are showing any signs of illness. It is interesting, as you say, that it ended up being a tiger, and there's so much focus on a tiger. And let's just go to that question for you. Is there any reason for concern about one cat species related to our domestic cats and that possible human-to-cat transmission?
So I think it's important to take into consideration right now that we are still in the process of learning a lot about this virus and which animals might be susceptible. So there's still a lot for us to understand about that. Clearly, it appears that this species is susceptible to showing clinical disease when infected by this virus. And there are, preliminary reports and preliminary information being shared with the medical community, the veterinary community, about, this virus and how it can potentially affect our domestic cats. So, but I would like to state that a lot of this information is preliminary. A lot of it has not yet been reviewed for scientific rigor through the normal review process. And so a lot of these studies and results, while they're, showing information that some cat species can be affected by this disease virus, this virus and the disease, we are still learning about, how they can then potentially transmit the disease to either other cats. But at this time, there is no evidence to suggest that any kind of animal can spread this particular virus to people. So that's important to remember during the process of getting all of this preliminary information. So yes, as we learn more, I think we will understand better about how our potential, pets at home could be impacted by this virus. But right now, that information is limited, and we only have some sporadic reports of clinical disease occurring in domestic felids or positive status without disease for pets that have been in households with people that have been affected by this particular virus. So as we learn more, it does not appear at this time that we have a lot of evidence supporting, widespread transmission between animals or any kind of significant risk for people from animals. However, like I said, a lot of this information is preliminary and we are learning every day.
Just as a tangent to that, though, are you a supporter of that story of origination, that at some point somewhere in China, the virus occurred in either a bat or some type of species, mutated into the animal world in some form, and then mutated into humans?
So what I would say is that we know that a lot of zoonotic diseases that can impact people originate in animal species. So there are definitely previous examples of viral diseases that had origins or were recognized to be in animal species that then did end up affecting humans. And I would point out that 60 to 70% of most emerging kind of new human infectious diseases oftentimes have an origin in, another animal species. And so it is important to consider that. And a lot of the relationships, genetic and taxonomic relationships between different species can kind of affect the susceptibility of an animal to a potential virus. So there's definitely, previous historic records of this happening, and I think there's, growing evidence just based on the relationship of this particular virus that it is closely related to a strain that was previously found in bats. That's definitely something to consider.
I'm talking with Dr. Janessa Geltema. She is the head veterinarian at the Sacramento Zoo, which means you cared for the tigers at the zoo. Most recently, Jillian, who went back to the San Francisco Zoo, and then her grandmother, Baja, Mohan as well. What about respiratory illnesses in large cats? Are they common, uncommon, very dangerous?
So there are a number of respiratory infections that can affect both domestic cats and our large exotic felids. And not all of them are due to coronavirus. So it's important to keep in mind that there are a lot of potential causes for respiratory disease in our large cats. So we don't usually like to jump to conclusions if we do one of our animals with a respiratory illness. However, knowing that we are still learning a lot about how this particular virus can affect a lot of, zoological species, we just don't have the data on it. It's always important to proceed with caution and to approach those cases with, coronavirus in mind, and knowing that that is a possibility. In the zoological medicine community, we definitely were kind of preparing for potential cases just because we don't know the susceptibility of a lot of species. And I certainly personally was not very surprised that we ended up seeing a case. I am a little surprised that the case was first recognized in a tiger. I was concerned for other species we thought might be, potentially susceptible due to their close, taxonomic relation to humans, like our non-human primates, our great apes. Seeing this disease occurring in some of our zoological species isn't surprising to me. I do think that from the zoological medicine standpoint, we've definitely been, as a community, preparing, for potential cases just because we don't know and we are learning about which animals could end up developing the disease.
Dr. Geltema, one more question. I know that the Sacramento Zoo is closed right now, and as with so many places, there have been job cuts and furloughs, and I'm sure that the zoo is in need of support. What is the situation with the care for the animals and the ongoing business that does need to happen within a zoo?
Yes, so that's an excellent question. So clearly, like many of the other local businesses, the zoo has been affected by, needing to restrict our employees to essential employees only. So we do have a small group of dedicated animal care and veterinary care personnel that are caring for the 500 animals that we have at the Sacramento Zoo. The zoo has been closed since March 14th, and a lot of our support for ongoing care for those animals does come from people visiting the zoo, as well as donations. So this event occurring, we've definitely had, to reduce staffing because of the closure. But we are continuing to provide excellent care as best we can under the circumstances. Taking safeguards to protect our animal collection and our staff during this
time.
We And we are, just to, in case anybody is interested in helping support the zoo during this time, there is an emergency fund accepting donations that people can access at saczoo.org if they're interested in helping support the zoo while it's closed to continue providing excellent care for the animals there.
Well, thank you for the conversation. I appreciate your time, and good luck with the ongoing work at the zoo.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. That is Dr. Janessa Geltema. She is a UC Davis professor of veterinary medicine and the head veterinarian at the Sacramento Zoo. Dr. Jane Sykes is on the phone with us now. She is professor of small animal medicine at UC Davis. And Dr. Sykes, glad to have you back on Insight.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me back.
Well, we were talking about a tiger, and I'm looking at a Huffington Post article with the headline, "A cat in Belgium tested positive for COVID-19, but you shouldn't panic." And you're actually quoted in that article. So what about the case of the cat?
Yeah, so we do have this one example of natural infection in a cat in Belgium, and that cat also did have clinical signs that might be suggestive of the disease COVID-19. Although we still can't absolutely prove definitively that the signs that that cat was showing were caused by the SARS coronavirus, too. So it's just one cat with signs that happened also to test positive, did test positive on multiple occasions. And according to reports, there was quite a large amount of virus that was present in the samples, which makes us be more inclined to think that the cat was truly infected as opposed to just having contamination by virus that happens to be in the environment. And we have had since then another report of an infected cat, and that was a cat in Hong Kong. That report was released on April the 3rd. This cat in Hong Kong was reported to be infected. It was with an owner that had COVID-19. The cat was quarantined on March the 30th, and the cat, that particular cat, had no clinical signs of respiratory or gastrointestinal illness, but multiple samples that were collected from that cat, as well as follow-up samples, were positive. So now we have two reports of natural infections of cats, one with signs and one without.
When you talk about samples, I believe you're talking about feces samples, and the cats aren't actually being tested with a COVID-19 test kit, correct?
Okay, so the samples that were taken in multiple cases were different samples from different parts of the body, so nasal, oral, and rectal swab samples, and tested using various assays, various tests that pick up viral RNA. So, depending on the place that was doing the testing, potentially different types of tests were used. But they're all tests for the virus, the RNA of the virus, not antibody tests at this time on the cats. We don't have any reports of antibody tests on these cats.
What did you think when you read the story about the tiger testing positive and other large animals? How did that translate for you to the work you do with small and domestic animals?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, in terms of maybe demonstrating the spectrum of different animal species that this virus is capable of infecting. As Dr. Geltema said, it's not particularly surprising that we discovered cases in zoo animals, and a little bit interesting that they were large cats. But there are many other viral infections of domestic cats that also infect large cats. So in that way, it wasn't that surprising.
In that article about the Belgium cat, you talk about a cat or dog maybe being what's called a dead-end host. Would you explain that phrase, the dead-end host?
Yeah, that term itself is a little bit misleading, but what it means, it's commonly used among infectious disease epidemiologists, people who study infectious diseases, and it's when an infection spills over into another host animal species, and then that animal is not capable of then transmitting the infection further. And it can be because they don't shed enough virus, various other factors that mean that viral spread does not occur beyond that point.
So what's your recommendation to animal owners as we're in this time of concern about the virus, but also this stay-at-home time when we're spending more time than ever before with our dogs and cats?
Yeah, so still, you know, I think that there's no really good evidence that dogs and cats and other pets can spread infection back to people. We're still learning more about this, but overwhelmingly the evidence does suggest that this is transmitted by human-to-human transmission. And so practicing physical distancing, really when you're with humans, and I've had people asking questions about whether they should pat other people's dogs when they're out walking. And I think the big risk is not the dog, but getting closer to the person who's walking that dog.
Right.
So we still recommend that, you know, that we have normal hygiene practices around dogs and cats that we should be doing on a daily basis anyway, washing hands after handling animals and not letting animals lick you in the mouth and the nose, especially if you're immunocompromised. And the recommendation still stands that people who have COVID-19 or are highly suspected to have it wear a mask in the home environment and minimize contact with their pets, because we still don't have a really good understanding of the degree to which this can be transmitted to animals. But based on all the cases that have occurred worldwide so far and some of the surveillance efforts that have been done in dogs and cats, it seems like dog and cat infections are very uncommon to rare.
Right. We have a couple of tigers and maybe just a few cats, perhaps a dog. So of all the millions and millions of animals in the world, it is still small. But I appreciate the conversation because it raises the question and we wonder. And I think our guidance and our best practices are constantly evolving.
Yeah, and I also probably would like to draw attention to one experimental study that was done in China, where they infected dogs and also cats and ferrets, and really need to be very careful about translating anything like that into the real world, where animals were infected with very high doses of virus and only very small numbers of animals were studied. There were very, very young animals that got infected, and it does not translate into something in the real world. So that's something that's come up repeatedly, and I think it's not yet a peer-reviewed publication. There's a lot of details that weren't reported in that paper, and so everybody needs to be careful about jumping to conclusions when they read something like that.
Dr. Sykes, thank you again for your time. I'm sure we'll check back in with you again, and in the meantime, stay safe. Take care.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
That is Dr. Jane Sykes, professor of small animal medicine at UC Davis. By the way, we did talk about our puppy cam yesterday from the Canine Companions for Independence. If you're interested in taking a look at that just for a smile, that is cci.org, cci.org. Up next, though, today's uplift, the new cottage industry that this pandemic has prompted people everywhere sewing, sewing and sewing. That's next on Insight on Cap Radio.